Jill Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Jill.
Hello.
All right. Honey mushrooms. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about honey mushrooms.
Make your mouth water?
A little bit.
Well, they're very kind of a renowned mushrooms for those who forage for mushrooms because they're good flavor, good taste, and they have a pretty wide range across a big part of the world, and they're pretty common. So they came to mind again because there's just a lot of fungi this year, lots of different kinds, and it seems to be the case everywhere. And whether I'm foraging or not, it's really fun to see them. And recently, again, came across a nice clump of honey mushrooms and when I was out working. And so just stopped to admire them. And what it did in the end was, as I continued on my way, it reminded me of something that I'm pretty sure we haven't talked about. And that is just this notion of how the world of fungi fit into our concept of the biggest. Okay, so in our culture, we're kind of into, well, the biggest, the heaviest. And of course, as one would expect, the things that we tend to come up with and measure and be aware of and become part of popular culture as well as scientific awareness are the things that our senses can pick up most readily, right? The biggest tree, whether we're talking about Minnesota or somewhere else in the country or world, or the heaviest, whatever, the largest animal. So lots of ink and video and people's own pictures of those who have been fortunate enough to see a blue whale, the biggest animal that ever lived, bigger than the dinosaurs. So it's a big creature. And yeah, it is big. But turns out that the world of the fungi completely overwhelms the blue whale in terms of size. I think it was back in the more early 2000s, before 2010 for sure, there was a group of mycologists, researchers from a university, I don't remember where, who documented the first humongous fungus, and that was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's from a group of mushrooms called the Armillaria, which is what the honey mushroom is a part of. It's a species of one of those that are called honey mushrooms that people would go out and gather. So their initial assessment of this fungus, looking at, of course, not just the fact that it has these fruiting bodies, which we go and gather because that's what we see and that's what we can consume, but looking at its real body, which is underground, and it forms these massive networks of something in their case that are called rhizomorphs because they're a more complex system than the more common mycorrhizal kind of network other typical mushrooms have. And these are much more substantial, and their tendrils are kind of thick networks of tendrils that are black, which is not what we typically think of as associated with mushrooms, but that's, again, because of what we've been exposed to or what we've seen. They create these massive networks of these rhizomorphs that we can't see, but this group went out to try to look for those parts and sample those parts, and then through genetics, identify, well, where are these all part of one organism, or is this a bazillion organisms or whatever, and then to age them. And so their initial assessment was that this particular fungus covered about 94 acres. And I think at that point, they estimated its weight at maybe 10 tons or something. So pretty big. At that point, they figured it was about, 1,000 years old or something like that. So that's big and that's old. Well, then about 10 years later, and I'm not sure what prompted this, but they decided to go back and maybe they kind of had improved their methods, felt like they could get a better sense of all this, having tried it once and let's try again and with our refined methods. Anyway, they went back to reevaluate and see if they, what they got with their different methods, perhaps, or more refined methods. And sure enough, they had to change their idea of just how big this one in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan was, in that it was now almost 450 tons was the estimate of its weight, and it covers quite a bit larger of an area. I think that was 2016. At that point, that was the biggest fungus among us that had been documented. I think it might have been in the same year, and another paper was published about a fungus in the Blue Mountains in eastern Oregon. And people may have heard about this because I can't imagine that didn't make the news somewhere along the way. They ultimately documented this particular fungus to be 3 square miles in size.
One entity,
one fungus, the network of its rhizomorphs covering 3 square miles and being about 8,000 years old. So again, we're back to the one-upping, you know, oh, well, I have the biggest. No, I have the biggest. And obviously, we really don't know the biggest because we're not out there looking. In the case of the armillaria fungi, they are different than many other of our mushrooms, for instance, that really focus strictly on already dead things. So those fungi are part of the whole decay mechanisms that are out there working on dead things. Armillarias are one of those that will also live on living things and actually lead to their demise and then live off their dead hosts that they've been living on. So we see the evidence of them that we can readily see are the clusters of mushrooms that we might go to pick. Where they form these really large individuals, they actually kill large swaths of trees. So that's part of the way that someone might get the sense of, oh, we should really kind of look into or want to look into, well, what's killed all these trees? I mean, if you're the, say, a land manager and suddenly you have a bunch of dead trees in a large swath, that would be an obvious question. Well, what was the source of the problem here? And in the case of some of these, including this place out in the Blue Mountains in Oregon, that is indeed what is the cause of this large swath of trees. And that's much more common to be seen out west, that you have these have larger patches of trees that have been killed by this fungus. This particular fungus just transitions from the life of its host to the death of its host in terms of continuing on. It has a pretty stable setup as long as the trees that it's comfortable, quote unquote comfortable being attached to, you know, and feeding from are a part of the scene. So another example of how homogeneity or uniformity in tree species can lead to big losses over time or all at once, even depending upon the pest, if you're thinking of it in terms of what causes mortality in a tree, that those pests can have a big effect if lots of the same trees that they live through are all together. Whereas sometimes in a more diverse forest where you have many different kinds of species, unless an organism is adapted to all of them or most of them, its expansion, its growth is going to be more restricted, limited in some ways.
And how does it kill the host trees? Does it just rob too much of its
nutrient? Just saps the nutrients away. So yeah, humongous fungus are definitely a part of our world and underestimated by most of us anyway, in terms of just how much they are influencing the world. And part of that is, again, because we just see the tiniest part of who they are. And that's true for so many of the things that we see even more readily than mushrooms. Most of what they are is out of sight to us.
Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thank you for talking to us about humongous fungi.